So if we start to rethink that and don't ask ourselves, what can we do to make our customers more loyal to us? But if we turn that around and say, what can we do to show our loyalty more to our customers? That mindset is tactic number three that I would recommend.
Welcome to Unmiss, your go-to digital marketing hub. I'm Anatoly Ulatovsky, here with expert tips and exclusive chats to boost your online game. Let's get started.
Hello, good people. Welcome to our show. Hello, bad people. Welcome to our show. Hello, welcome. Today, we are going to discuss about customer experience. It's very important. I pay so much attention to learn my customers. And I know marketing doesn't work if you don't know your customers. Nothing can work. You can't get results. And I remember when I started my digital journey, I ignored customer experience. The main reason was competition was low. So basically, we created content that worked well. Today, I can't. It's impossible. You need to think more about customers. And according to data, keeping customers longer costs 5 times less than acquiring new customers. You don't need to spend a lot of in marketing and sales. If you have happy customers who can bring their friends and recommend your products, if it's high quality, if you provide this customer experience. I'm so excited to discuss a lot more with Steven Van Belham. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, Anatoly. Thanks for having me in your show.
Yeah, a big pleasure. Big pleasure. I want to learn more. I see a lot of great books on your background. Steven, I want to learn more about books because I love this format. It's my favorite. I love to listen audio podcasts, read blog posts, watch videos, but books bring more value than any other format. And I think because authors spend like 6 months to write a book, sometimes years of work, and it's foundation. I get a lot more value from books than from any other formats. And yeah, I spend some time every single day to read books. Steven, can you tell more about you, about your background with all these books and anything that could help our listeners to learn more about you?
Yeah, of course, with pleasure. My passion in my professional life is to inspire the world to act in a more customer-centric way. I believe that every professional can work in a more customer-centric way without investing more money or more time, that it's mainly a mindset. I've been in this field for more than 20 years. I started as a researcher. I've been 14 years in research to understand consumer behavior, also linked to technology. I've written 6 books on the topic, and today I spend 80% of my time giving keynote presentations about customer experience around the world. I'm the co-founder of a company called Nextworks, and Nextworks organizes inspiration trips around the world for senior executives. I think that's the key thing. I'm married. I have 2 sons. They're 12 and 14, and we're enjoying life.
Nice, nice. Steven, I want to ask more about your books. I found that many business books are good for sleeping. You know, when you have problems with sleep, you can take a new boring book, can read it, and forget anything on this book. You don't need to pay for medicine pills, you know, if you have this problem. But if I take some other books from famous authors like Jack London, for example, I can live on this book. If I read any of his books, I can live on this book. He wrote these books plus 100 years ago, but I still live on this journey. I can feel on my skin and I can forget about water, meal, anything because I'm inside these books. I can say some business books are great as well. For example, Josh Sugarman wrote a great book, How to Retain Readers Longer, and he wrote this book before digital, that was published in digital era, but he got this experience before digital, and I think all these insights can relate today even more, because human psychology is the same, nothing changed. Can you tell about value that I can get and my listeners can get from your books? What kind of difference you provide in your books and value what we can get, your writing style, and anything that can help or give a strong reason to read your books?
All right. Well, I would recommend my latest book, Diamond in the Rough, which is now a few months old. It's my most practical book I've ever written. It has more than 102 practical tips to act in a more customer-centric way. As from tomorrow, again, without investing more money, without investing more time, linked to your mindset. And I have, I think, a very practical writing style. So I'm not into big theories. I'm the example guy. So I start from an example and build a story upon that. And the goal that I have with this book is to really help people with the how question. I've written 6 books and they've been all quite successful. But people always ask me, Stephen, we love your vision, but how can we do it? And then I had to help with the how. A Diamond in the Rough, my new book, is really this how book that I wanted to write. So everyone in the world that says, okay, as from tomorrow, I want to act in a more customer-centric way, just by changing my mindset, read The Diamond in the Rough. And if you don't want to read the whole book, you can just skip to the yellow pages in the book where you have the tips and you can go straight to the action.
Nice. Yeah, you convinced me. I'm going to read your book. Guys, I'll put the link in the description so you can find this book as well. And because I need this knowledge, I need to know how to get customers, how to satisfy them, how to retain them. And Stephen, in marketing, I see this big issue between marketers and salespeople. And according to data, most salespeople distrust marketers, but we need to get this data. It's tough to create the right campaign without data. And I see when companies chase high volume, they don't think about sales. And I don't care how much traffic I can get, like million traffic. Okay, if I can't sell, why I need to have this traffic? If I get million views on YouTube or any other social media, but I want to sell, I want to submit my call to action. And marketers rely on data from customer experience. Can you tell, probably from your experience, how to improve this connection between customers, between marketers and salespeople?
Well, at the end of the day, you know, it's everyone has a shared goal in a company. The shared goal is to create value for your customer. And by doing so, hopefully it will bring value back to the organization. And there are a number of ways to create value. And the companies that understand that are the ones that have the best brand and are the ones that sell most. And usually those are companies where marketing and sales go hand in hand, because the smart salesperson knows that if you have a strong brand, you can ask a premium price and the sale goes a lot easier. And a smart marketer knows that if they do marketing right, that it should create a call to action so that people tend to buy more. So, you know, the internal fight is destroying value for the customer. It's starting from that shared goal. The problem is internally that very often marketers and salespeople have different KPIs. They have different targets. I think at the end of the day, they should learn how to support each other's targets and see how they can work together in achieving that, because a great salesperson is very good for the brand and is also some sort of a marketeer at the same time. So starting with the shared goal of those two departments, I think that is the way forward.
Yeah, I think they need to speak to each other more often, you know, and sometimes we can invite some salespeople to marketing department to speak to them, to share our vision or how we can help, because marketers need sales as well. We need to improve sales. It's not like to get
and they can learn from each other. Usually a salesperson is short time, is focused on the short run results. Mm-hmm. Marketer is more on the long run brand building thing. But I think as a salesperson, you also should invest in long-term relationships, because it's not because a person doesn't buy today, maybe they will buy 2 years from now.
Of course.
And as a marketer, it's not just only about building a brand in the long run. It's also about doing things that create results in the short run. So they can learn from each other and each other's skills to succeed in their goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. And from my experience, the best marketers have sales background. You know, if you not have the sales background, you can become a great marketer. If you have no this background, it's better to spend some time in sales to understand how it works. Then you can create great marketing campaigns. Stephen, let's talk about tools. I have a bunch of tools. great tools that can help me a lot. But can you share your list of 11 tools that can help you to learn customer experience?
Oh, that's a difficult question. What kind of tools are you looking at? Into what direction are you searching here?
I mean, like tools that can help to increase sales, to improve customer experience.
The tactics that we can use. First tactic that I would recommend people is to do like a positivity audit of all your communication that you send out. And I'm not just talking about advertising or proposals. I'm talking about a lot of the automated stuff that goes out, like emails or auto replies and all those kind of things. Just take a very detailed look at all communication that you send out and ask yourself, is this creating the vibe that we want? Is this creating a positive vibe? Is this sharing enthusiasm, or are we destroying it here? That's the first tactic. Just do like a positivity audit of all your communication. The second thing that is really valuable is getting feedback from the market. There are different ways to do that. You can look into your objective data. You can look into the questions that come in through the contact center. You can have survey data that you ask for. So getting that data is one thing, but how you deal with it is a second thing. So I see more and more companies that are focused on improving the satisfaction scores. And by doing that, it's almost like they're manipulating them. They're doing calls before and after. They're asking, almost begging their customers to give them a 9 or a 10 on a net promoter score. So they're influencing the score. And because of that, you get inflation of all these scores. That's not the goal of the whole thing. I think you should use the tactic of getting data to learn from the feedback from the customer. And if you learn from the feedback from the customer, you can better understand them, and then you can act upon it. And it's that action that you put in the play after you got the feedback that will eventually increase your service. And because of that, your scores will go up. That's another important one. Get your data, but don't go for, you know, managing the score, manage the feedback. And as a result, you will deliver a better service. That's the second one that I'm thinking about. And a third tactic is rethinking loyalty. Now many organizations have like a loyalty program in place where they reward customers if they spend a lot of money or time with them. They're loyalty programs, and very often they drive behavior, but they don't really create loyalty, because the loyalty programs are transactional and loyalty is an emotional thing, right? So if we start to rethink that and don't ask ourselves, what can we do to make our customers more loyal to us? But if we turn that around and say, what can we do to show our loyalty more to our customers? That mindset is tactic number three that I would recommend.
Mm-hmm. And you remind me about loyalty, that some companies can think that they have loyal customers, but loyalty, you know, only works if you have better products, you know, if you have better products than competitors have. So basically, I love iPhone. I use iPhone because Android is not ready to satisfy my intent better than iPhone. and I know if you need loyalty, buy a dog. So if you have a dog, you have loyalty. But if you speak about customers, people are looking for better solutions. If competitors can provide something like that,
I'm disagreeing with you here, Antoni. There's more than product quality. It's very hard to just win on product quality. Like, take a restaurant, for instance. You could go to the restaurant with the best food in the world, but if the service sucks...
Of course.
You will prefer a restaurant that has a lower quality food, but a better experience. So the service levels create loyalty more than just the product.
Anyway, it's quality as well. You know, so if you speak about product... Product means customer experience and some product as well. So,
Of course, but product is very often a minimum demand. It's it's something you expect from an organization that they deliver upon the product. In a lot of markets, the difference between products that companies offer are very limited. There are not that many companies that can just win on product because they're so similar across the market, and the difference is made in the experience very often today.
Mm-hmm. Steven, I want to ask about big companies. You know, from my experience, it's tough to reach out to some companies. For example, LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have this experience, but you need to wait like for a long time to get this response.
I agree.
Remember when I signed, what was it? Microsoft Azure, it's cloud service, but I didn't use it. And I changed my mind to another cloud product. But Microsoft took my money automatically. It's not a lot, but that was like $20. I tried to unsubscribe, but I couldn't find how to do it. I spent like a few hours, $20, and I left. Next month, again $20, again, and that was experience like 6 months, and I got it. Okay, I paid $120 because I have no time to unsubscribe. And if you use the service, it's tough to find it. It's almost impossible. So I reached out to their support team and got reply like in a few days. Okay, we unsubscribed you. We even refund all your money. But, it's not good experience, you know, for me. I will never use this Azure service from Microsoft. The same experience I have with banks. For example, one, I decided to pay for gas, and bank declined my payment. I only had one credit card at that time in my pocket, and I needed gas so much. I tried to call the bank, and I spent like 30 minutes to wait in the line. Then I got the answer, I need to visit office. When I came to office, I spent like 2 hours when someone explained to me they can't decide this problem. I need to call to special number. I called it to the special number. Like, I wasted 8 hours to decide just a simple issue with my credit card. My credit card, my money, that was not credit. It's tough experience, tough. And I'm not alone. I know many big companies that have a lot of clients, million clients. It's tough. It's tough to help all of them, but you can create this great customer experience. Can you tell how to decide such issue for big companies that have probably not millions, let's imagine 1,000 clients, still a lot, and all of them have some questions, wanna cooperation. So any tips about that?
We feel your pain. We feel your pain of these bad experiences. And you're right. There are a number of organizations that are almost impossible to reach. Very often, they're close to monopolies that they have. Like LinkedIn is close to a monopoly. There is no second LinkedIn that you can go to, so you don't have another choice than to use them. They got millions of users, and they don't have the support for that. It's the same with Facebook. Amazon is very hard to reach. So a lot of these really big tech platforms are really suffering with their service. Their strategy is almost like, we're going to make sure that we cannot be reached, but we're going to try to make things work. And some of them are good in that. Some of them have some work to do. The challenge here will be to use technology for them, because they got, you know, hundreds of millions of users with hundreds of millions of requests every single day. I mean, companies like LinkedIn, they're owned by Microsoft. Microsoft has ChatGPT through OpenAI. They will have to start to use their own technology to improve customer service so that they can automate a lot of things, because the volume is so high that it's impossible to solve that with a human contact center. You would need so many people that you would go almost bankrupt, or the cost is too high. So for them, automation is the only way forward, and then make sure you have some humans for the really special cases. But like what you explained, that's not a special case. You're just a customer that wants to quit. That should be easy to solve that for them.
Mm-hmm. And do you think AI is ready to decide this issue? I mean, like chatbots. For example, I remember one example from probably Hyundai. Hyundai set up chatbot on their website, and this chatbot sold a few cars for $1.
Yeah.
So customers asked for discount, and yeah, after trading, the price was $1. So yeah. I think, you know, today chatbots can't provide great experience. They can learn your content to reply to some questions, but I'm not sure if it's they today ready, you know, to decide all issues. What do you think about AI?
Well, I think in the past year, between 2015 and 2023, we all had very frustrating experiences with chatbots on websites that are basically like some sort of an Excel sheet that you went through, and it was usually always a disaster. I think today, if you use ChatGPT, I'm a very happy user of ChatGPT. I use it every single day for multiple purposes. And it is really impressive. And you can imagine if this software is applied in customer service, that it can really make a difference. The AI and the software is ready. The thing that isn't ready is the data of companies. So in order to make that customer service work for your organization, you need to feed it and you need to train it with the data of your organization. And that's where the problem is. A lot of organizations are suffering from that. A lot of the data that you need to let a chatbot work is unstructured data. And most companies are not well organized yet to deal with that unstructured data. So that is slowing things down. The technology is there. Companies aren't ready. And this is something that we're going to see in the next 24 months. Where really big organizations are putting all their IT resources into solving that. Once they've done that, then we're going to see a very high quality of chatbots. And then eventually you could start to end up in a world where, let's say, the large majority of all operational questions should be answered with a chatbot. All the low quality answers should be gone. It also means that the role of humans will completely change, where the role of humans today is helping people in an operational way. Tomorrow is going to be helping people in a more emotional way because the operational part is done by a machine. So you're going to have to reskill and retrain all your human service people as well. So it's going to be a huge transformation for many companies, both on a digital level and on a human level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, we need this mix. So if AI is not ready, but AI can decide some problems, probably not all, but some problems. And we need human beings, experts who can decide the rest problems. Yeah. And for example, I use AI a lot. I started to use AI before ChatGPT. Today, I doubled my energy with AI. We grow our results. We get great results in trading, investing niches. I think AI is great if you use it in the right way. I mean, like, you need to know the topic, you need to know how to write, you need to understand what you do. If you set up generic prompts without understanding, you can't. For example, if you ask me to write great content about weight loss, I can't, because I had this personal experience to lose weight, but I can't teach others how to do it. So, Steven, you mentioned a few times about data. Can you tell about collecting the right data? I spoke with a few great data experts, and I got interesting point that you need to have enough data, not over data. So when you have over data, it might confuse what to do. And remember when Jeff Bezos had a meeting with research team, and this team asked him to give more time to research about customers. He denied. He told, we have enough data. And data was about product Alexa. Today, almost all homes in the US have this product. And Jeff Bezos got enough data to understand it's ready. It's better to start, to implement, to test, to experiment. And can you tell about how to get enough data about customer experience?
The amount of information you can gather is endless. Huh? So I think what you need to do is start with the customer and ask yourself, what kind of benefits do we want to create for that customer? Are we trying to be faster than real time? Are we going to be preventive? Are we going to anticipate to problems? Or are we going to invest in hyper-personalization of content, or do we want to make things more convenient? So I think you need to start with the benefit you want to create, make it very specific, and then ask yourself, what kind of data do I need to make that happen? And don't start with, all right, what kind of data will we collect? Because, I mean, the options are so broad that you will drown in the lake of data. Start with the customer and then reverse engineer it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you tell methods how to start with customers? I mean, like, you need to schedule meetings with customers. You need to go to them. You need to use data from sales department. So any tips how to do it right?
Well, I'm not sure if I really understood the question. Can you maybe rephrase it a little bit?
I mean, like, how to collect this data, to speak with customers directly, to take from sales department. So the best practices, probably.
Oh, I think there's a lot of objective data that you can try to collect. Like, if you sell machines, make sure that those machines have sensors so that you know how customers are using them. If people call with complaints, make sure you log those complaints so you can see what the complaints are that come in. And of course, there's a lot of online data available as well. On a small data point, if you're in sales today, I mean, you can check out the LinkedIn profile, the YouTube profile, maybe TikTok or Instagram of the people that you're connecting with. And just doing that little bit of research about small data will enhance your possibilities to personalize your conversation. So there's so much out there that is just widely available that you can use. And then, of course, you've got survey-based data where you can ask for feedback and see what people tell you, where you have room for improvement and where you really excel in.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Steven, I want to ask about mistakes. In my life, I made a lot of mistakes. I keep doing them. It's part of the process because I usually start from best practices, generic strategies, nothing special. Then I made mistakes and can learn. Okay, what I need to do, how to change, how to adapt. For example, we paid $6,000 for one press release to write and pitch, but we needed 12 press releases a week, $72,000. So I decided I need to save this money and started to write myself. I wrote a bunch of press releases, I pitched all of them, got zero mentions, zero results, nothing. Nothing worked. But I learned how it works. I learned the process. And we explained to our blog authors who can post content on Forbes, Bloomberg, big websites, Investopedia. We explained to them, look at, you write great blog posts, but we need press releases. It's something different about trending topics, to share something new and valuable, your expert opinion. And after some time, like 6 months, we got first results. Then we got great results from CNN, Bloomberg, Business Insider, CNN, MSN, Yahoo Finance, big websites. And but I started with complete failure. Nothing worked for me. And I think it's okay to fail, to learn and go ahead. But can you tell about mistakes that you can see companies still do in customer experience, and your tips how to avoid such mistakes? Because some mistakes we need to do to learn from them, but some mistakes we can avoid to learn before doing something. So tell, if you can share this list, it will be great.
Yeah, of course. I always recommend companies to become friction hunters. And a friction hunter is someone who looks for small steps in the process where you waste the time of your customers or where you make it too complex. And a friction hunter can identify those small frustrations. And a friction hunter also knows that with some minor changes, limited efforts to change that, we can really make a difference towards customers. And the cool thing is that every person in an organization can become a friction hunter. You just have to keep your eyes open, look for details where you waste the time of customers, where you make it too complex for customers. And a lot of the frictions that companies have installed is to protect themselves against a small group of customers that may take advantage of them. And they bumped into an issue, and instead of just accepting that that can happen and solving the friction, they make it even more complex because they want to protect themselves, and it becomes a negative spiral. Friction hunting means you remove those frictions, you remove the frustrations, and you create a completely different experience for your customers by doing so. And it's trial and error sometimes. Huh? It's like, if you see that people have to wait long to get something, how can we shorten that? Because that's a frustration. And it can create some sort of a momentum in an organization if everyone is really focused on understanding how to remove friction by friction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I have this issue as well. You know, focus is very important. And if you can't focus, it's like in marketing, we have this quote, if you sell to anyone, you sell to no one. So you need to focus to choose the right customers. For example, I prefer to cooperate with big clients, big customers who pay a lot, because if I get the same amount but with more clients, it's tough with to do this admin job, many other tips. And Steven, I want to ask about you. I have founders of companies who are looking for ways how to improve customer experience. And I have students in my network who are looking for ways how to learn from scratch without having any knowledge skills. Founders need to get the basic to cooperate with great experts. I mean, like, okay, they need to understand how it works, then to find someone who will decide this issue. And from my experience, I get much better results with people who understand what I do. If they understand, we can go ahead together. So if they understand why we need to create high quality content, why it's important to think about more customers, why it's important to think about white hat SEO, many tips. But if they don't, they usually tell, go to Google, go to YouTube, just get the basic. You need to understand how it works. Let's imagine you started today from scratch without any experience, knowledge, skills. It's your first day in customer experience. You didn't write any book. You want to write these books, but you didn't write them. You have a dream, goal to build a big company with happy customers. What will you do if you do anything from scratch?
I would go for the concept of finding 100 customers that really love you instead of finding 1,000 that think you're average. It's what you mentioned. We don't know the secret to success, but the secret of failing is trying to please everyone. If you're average, you will be able to reach 1,000 people, but it will not be lasting. It won't be a sustainable relationship. So you really have to understand, how can I make 100 people really love me? How can I make them super excited about me? And you start from there. Don't go for the mass on day one. Go for deep relationship on day one and build your business from that point on. That's what I would try to do.
Wow, nice. I love it. I agree. Steven, can you share your daily routine? What you usually do? How you start your day? How you finish your day? How you prioritize things? How you find the balance between job, family, sport? So any tips that can help our listeners about that?
Yeah, sure. With pleasure. I don't have a typical day because I spent 80% of my time is giving keynote speeches on events or in companies in different kind of industries all over the world. So the timing of my keynote defines my day. So like today, I had to be at a bank here in Belgium. I had to be there at 7:30 in the morning. So I left at 5:30 in my house. So I woke up at 5, took a shower, small breakfast. I took off. And tomorrow will be the same like that again. And other weeks, I do my preparation in the morning and I do my keynotes in the afternoon. But if you look to my week, let's say an average week, it's a combination of performing on stage. It's doing some prep calls. It's creating content. I spend a lot of time making my content for my YouTube, my Instagram, for my LinkedIn, about customer experience. I try to go at least for 4 big hikes a week with our dog, or sometimes without our dog. And I love to spend some time on my hobbies, which is cooking, making dinner for the family. It's playing the piano. It's doing some reading, so I make sure that I have some time for that as well. And in the weekends, we spend a lot of time with our friends. We have a very busy social calendar. We spend time with the children, helping them with their homework, bringing them to their hobbies. One is playing piano, the other is playing football. So yeah, it's that's a little bit how we spend our days, I think. Is that an answer to your question?
Yeah, of course, of course. About kids, you mentioned that you help them with homework. I got this question. It's not related to our main topic, but I still get this question about education. I have my son, and I learned from a few experts that you don't need to help your kids to make homework, because if they have no problems, I mean, like if someone can decide these problems, it will be tough for them to decide these problems in the future when nobody can help them. What do you think about that?
Well, that we have to change our strategy if that is what the experts are saying, because I think especially my wife is trying to help them quite a lot. But apparently that is something we will have to revise. I will look into that. This is new information for me, but it makes kind of sense that if the support is being removed, that it may change. On the other hand, you know, it's a choice that you make. What we see, if we would throw them in the deep, that probably they wouldn't have the most successful academic career. And they're 12 and 14, so they're getting started. But we try to, you know, swim together with them and then try to bit by bit try to let them do it in a more independent way. Sometimes that works. Usually it doesn't.
Yeah.
So maybe we have the wrong strategy. I don't know. I'm going to discuss this with my wife tonight. Thanks for that information.
I'm not an expert on this topic. I can't advise anything, but I don't help my son to do this homework. I tell him, look, it's your problem. It's your school. It's not that I'm bad. I help a lot with other stuff. I mean, like, if you need to go to soccer, okay, I can pay for private lessons. I can bring you early in the morning, in the evening. But I don't help with many problems, almost anything, you know, because according to data, kids that have this experience when parents decide almost everything, a lot of problems, they have no problems. And it's tough for them to decide in the future when they will wait that someone will help them. But parents help only when you are kids. So, yeah, just it's better to learn more about that. I spent some time with research.
I'm going to study that. Thanks for that input.
Yeah, Steven. And I have my final question. Very important question. About AI and about the future. Many things are coming fast, especially today. We have AI that was simple to ignore, but tough today, impossible tomorrow. We have virtual reality from Apple. I don't know how it will change the world. I don't know. Many things will come, like Web 3.0. So technologies are growing fast, but customers are still humans. You know, at least if we don't sell to AI robots, Terminators, we'll see. Today, I hope we will sell to human beings. Can you forecast what kind of future will be in customer experience? And your tips how to adapt to this possible future?
Well, I do think we're going to see a transformation in roles, because as we discussed earlier, a lot of the basic customer service requests will be automated. I think the risk is that a lot of companies will only focus on the increase in efficiency and the increase in productivity. By doing so, we will over-focus on automation. As a consequence, if you score companies from a 0 to 10 point scale, the 0 to 6s may disappear because of automation, things go better. But there's also a chance that the 9 and 10s will disappear because we overfocus on efficiency. And usually people give a 9 or a 10 to a human. So there's a big chance that for a lot of organizations, AI will have an increase in average customer service, a decrease in terrible service, but also a decrease in fantastic service. And this is something that I would recommend every company to be aware of. Like, the efficiency part is very valuable, but just be aware that in certain situations, you need the more emotional part, the more human part, to really create that unique kind of customer relation. And the companies that understand to combine those two, I think those will be the winners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. We'll see. I have my crystal ball, but it doesn't work. I tried a few times. The wrong prediction all the time. But I'm excited about the future. What?
Yeah, me too.
Anyway, I don't know. Whatever happens, I'm excited because I found if you adapt faster than your competitors, you will be fine. Just adapt. Adapt whatever happens because we are on the second stage. I mean, like, we can create OpenAI, Microsoft, Google, but we can use this technology to win customers. Steven, it's a big pleasure. Thanks a lot for your
time. Likewise.
Yeah, for sharing all these valuable bombs with us. Tell the best way how to keep learning from you, how to reach out to you, how to follow you.
Our best is to follow me on social media, LinkedIn, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. That's where I share my stuff. Every week, new content about customer experience. If they want to reach out or, you know, learn more about the book or my keynotes, my website is the best place to go to, stephenvanbellegem.com. And there you can find everything you need to get in touch with me.
Awesome. Awesome. Guys, you can find all the links in the description below. Listen to us on Apple, Google, Spotify. Thanks again for your time. Love it. So valuable. I know it's important to learn more about customer experience, to win customers, to retain them longer. And guys, I recommend to anyone to follow Steven at all social media or you're live on social media, TikTok, YouTube, because I love TikTok as well. I love YouTube. I love to consume great content. Okay, guys, love you. See you.
Thanks for tuning in to Unmiss. Enjoyed the show? Drop us a review on your favorite platform and help us spread the digital marketing wisdom. See you next episode.